Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, I'd like to open this episode by thanking Kevin McCarthy.
Please do.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin McCarthy, for announcing your retirement from Congress on Wednesday morning like a petty little drama queen, thus taking the petty little drama queen mantle away from former New York State Rep. George Santos. I was done with George Santos.
That guy's so boring.
He jumped the shark like Fonzie with a jetpack. Like,
yeah. Oh, good reference.
Thank you. But he was getting so tiresome. And Kevin comes in, saves America from a whole other cycle of Santos.
Right. We did not get Wednesdayed.
We did not get Wednesdayed. Kevin knew we were recording this morning, and he released his little op-ed about how he's retiring at the end of the year, at the end of the month.
Just in time. Bringing the majority in Congress down to two? I think it's two.
I love that for Mike Johnson.
I love it for him.
Fun episode today, Alyssa.
A great time.
I did too. We kept it lean, kept it tight. We get into Moms for Liberty.
Not all moms, not really for liberty.
Yeah, not that many moms, not that much liberty, it turns out. We're going to talk a little bit about that organization and what they're trying to do and what we think they're actually trying to do. And then we talk a little bit about some of the news out of Washington, Kevin McCarthy, etc.
Bye,
Kev. You know what I'm so glad about?
What?
We didn't even really talk about George Santos that much.
Because he's gone forever. We never have to talk about him again.
I'm so sick of him, and I'm so glad we don't talk that much about George Santos this week. We also have a really interesting interview with Jamie Manson from Catholics for Choice, which is a interesting organization.
Very.
Especially around the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. You're going to love what she has to say about Mary, because it's very good. and then we get into a little bit of I Feel Petty. We're both petty this week, much like Kevin McCarthy.
And we did a toast and a troast. Little toasty, little roasty.
Little toasty, little roasty, like a s'more at the end of news.
Yeah.
You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who would rather die than imagine having a threesome with a founding member of Moms for Liberty.
Cosign.
Oh, my God. Alyssa, when I tell you that I was working on the outline before I went to bed last night, and so this was incorporated into my dream, I had a dream that I was barefoot in New York City, and I had I was looking at my calendar, and it was like, I have to go meet with Moms for Liberty, and I was like, do they think they're going to have a threesome with me? Because they're not.
Menage for me, but not for thee.
Seriously. Oh, man. There's like a few gross news stories this week. We're going to get more into Moms for Liberty. It's more than just a threesome. It's also that they're total fucking assholes. But let's talk a little bit about Kevin McCarthy, really.
Kev. Bye, Kev.
So, Alyssa, as a pettiness expert, what exactly about Kevin McCarthy announcing via an op-ed, I think, in the Washington Post? What makes his move on Wednesday so petty?
Well, he's like burning the whole house down, Erin. You know, when Nancy Pelosi decided not to be speaker anymore, she still stayed as a rank and file member. Kevin proves to all of us he has never, ever been excited about being a rank and file member, about representing his district. He was always in it to be leader, which is why it took him, 15 or 17 tries to actually get it done and, you know, very little time to be undone. And the pettiness goes to the fact that he's screwing his whole party by doing this. He could have served out the rest of his term, but instead he said he's leaving at the end of the year, which means, Erin, that the Republican majority will be down to two now that Santos is gone, which
seems so funny. I'm sorry. Like, okay, we talked about this off mic, but we need to develop a matrix system where one axis is on one end is funny and one end, the other end is not funny. And then the other axis is bad for America and good for America. Because this is so funny and bad for America.
Right?
It's an upper right quadrant. It's funny and bad for America.
Yeah. I mean, also, Mike Johnson, yikes. Good luck, bro.
I get the impression that Kevin McCarthy doesn't like Mike Johnson. Going to go out on a limb here and say that I think
I think you might be right, Aaron. Mike Johnson, who knows? Maybe we'll find out he was behind the Kevin coup to begin with.
That would be funny, but I don't think he's got I don't think he's got the like mental capacity to scheme like that.
It's fair enough.
You know who I think does, and this is just me like acting as though I'm writing on a show about this because, you know, reality is never as good as like Succession. But if this were like Succession or Veep or something, it would be Liz Cheney who was behind all of it.
Also entirely possible, having a big week.
My first thought when I saw that Kevin McCarthy was retiring at the end of the month was that Liz Cheney's new book that just came out this week was so mean that he just couldn't even, he just couldn't face his colleagues anymore.
She made him cry uncle. He was like, all right, enough already. I'm going. Jesus.
Liz's revenge. Liz's revenge. Okay. So there's a debate on Wednesday night. We're not going to be able to talk about the debate because it's Wednesday morning. I mean, we can talk about it. It's going to be, I don't know. Did you feel
the
like.
The same?
Yeah. I mean, don't you kind of feel like you're a Roman in a Colosseum watching like the B team of gladiators fight?
Without question, Aaron. I mean, it is like Trump is not there and who it's down to Nikki, Ron, Vivek, and Chris, right? It's just the four of them?
Just the four. Yeah. The thing is like. It just feels very much like political watchers are just sitting there like, amuse me, amuse me.
Right, like you've promised me debates. You must give me debates.
Yeah, perform, perform. And it's like none of these people are going to be the nominee, most likely.
I mean, most likely not, unless something fairly catastrophic, cataclysmic happens in the next 2 months.
Look, this has been an era of cataclysm, so don't put it past reality.
Right, that's why we caveat. There's a chance.
Something very weird could happen, and one of those four people on stage could end up being the nominee, but it would have to be exceptionally weird. It would have to be. But yeah, there's a debate. But I really wanted to take some time, since we can't really get into what stupid stuff was said in the debate, I wanted to take some time to go into a sort of like, I guess, a new power player in politics. That are deeply annoying and deeply fascist.
Yes.
So let's get into this. We've talked about them before. We've heard about them in the news. They are Moms for Liberty. Moms for Liberty, representing one of two genders in the Republican Party, moms and boys, Proud Boys and Moms for Liberty. Moms for Liberty, according to their mission statement, welcomes all that have a desire to stand up for parental rights at all levels of government. Can't you just tell that this mission statement was like, it was done in a focus group. They focus grouped the fuck out of this. And the people who were doing it were like political consultants who are definitely not moms, like standing behind.
As many of the Moms for Liberty are also not moms.
Many of them are not moms, nor do they actually want liberty. It's a very ironic name. The founders, according to the mission statement, is the founders are moms on a mission to stoke the fires of liberty. You're going to throw books in that fire, moms? as former school board members, they witnessed how short-sighted and destructive policies directly hurt children and families. Now they're using their firsthand knowledge and experience to unite parents who are ready to fight those that stand in the way of liberty. So here's something that I was surprised to learn about Moms for Liberty. It wasn't founded until 2021.
Yes, I know. You know what? It is very funny. When we were doing that, I did not realize that their essential, the kernel that they organized around was really masking in schools.
It was, yes, exactly. But in 2021, that was like the one thing that Republicans were like, oh, we have, okay, this is like a winner.
Yeah. Because people are annoyed by masks. Let's dig in.
People are annoyed by masks and school closures and sort of disarray around like, who's going to look after these kids? Like in Virginia, we saw it. Governor Youngkin got elected essentially on parents being like, the fuck, guys, you can't just keep jerking us around like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Moms for Liberty tried to pick up that football after the whistle was blown and run it all the way to the end zone and then do a touchdown dance. And hasn't quite worked out the way they've wanted to. But according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, Moms for Liberty is a far-right anti-government organization, which I think I'm going to go by that definition instead of the gobbledygook that they gave out themselves. They advocate for the abolition of the Department of Education. Mm-hmm. They advance conspiracy theories. They have supported chapter members who have quoted Hitler in official literature.
And can I just pop in here for a sec? Because when they said they quoted Hitler, I was like, by accident? Like, did they use a quote that they didn't realize was attributed to him? And
right,
then
Hitler
I found
said,
the flyer.
Hitler said a lot of things. No.
We all say a lot. No. It was literally like, here's the quote, Adolf Hitler. They were very aware who gave the quote.
And then they were like, whoops, shouldn't have done that. And then, like, at a convention later, someone was like, yes, they should have. It's just...
it's a journey with these people.
Yeah, and it's sort of, I mean, it's very gaslighty. But another thing I was surprised to learn about Moms for Liberty. So it was founded by three women named Tiffany, Tina, and Bridget, who are Florida school board members. Moms for Liberty is closely affiliated with the Florida Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And Governor Ron DeSantis, the whiniest bitch in American politics. And mm-hmm. In the image and likeness of its closely affiliated, I guess, spiritual leader, Moms for Liberty is an organization for whiny little bitches.
Yeah.
100% yeah. Whiny little bitches.
They don't like masks and they don't like books.
They don't like masks. They don't like books. But you know what they like the least?
What?
Gay people trying to exist.
Oh, yeah, they don't like gay people either.
They don't like gay people existing. I don't know how we go from like, I think that some of the restrictions in schools are not necessarily in line with epidemiological science. I don't know how we go from that to like, fire the gay teachers. Like
that in the White House, Erin, is what we would have called mission creep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the creepiest of mission creeps. I was also surprised to learn, Alyssa, there's only 103,000 members in the entire country.
Do you know what? I was very disturbed to learn New York State has the second highest Moms for Liberty membership behind Florida and just ahead of Pennsylvania.
Wow. Congratulations.
Blue states. You got to stay awake even if you're living in the blue states. You have no idea what can be going on.
Yeah. A lot of Moms for Liberty in New York State. I just, the 100,000 number really struck me because that's not that many people.
It's not that many people. I mean, especially if you spread them over about almost 300 chapters.
Yeah. That's not very many people. But like also, how many, if you only had 100,000 followers on Instagram, you would be considered like a micro influencer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like you're not even like really a celebrity. Maybe you have like a niche sort of fame, but like you're not really a celebrity. I don't know.
You might get paid a low-key fee to post about like a probiotic.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it seems like Moms for Liberty is a smokescreen for an extreme far-right agenda using the mantle of parents' rights to pretend that like it's a parents' rights issue to regulate whether LGBTQ people can be mentioned as human beings in schools, or whether children should be allowed to read books that educate them on their bodies, or on sexuality that is anything but cishet sexual relationships.
Right.
It also is a organization that doesn't have it's a 501c4, which means that they don't have to disclose who's giving them money.
Nope.
And so it's pretty murky. And this is just going to be some wild speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But based on available public information, it seems like there's not that many big players in funding these conservative causes.
Totally agree. Because if you think about it, Erin, Moms for Liberty raised something like $2 million last year. And if you think about it, they have 100,000 members. Like, even if everybody gave $20.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not. I mean, they get a couple big donations a year, but they really aren't getting like $2 million, not a lot of money.
Right. And their merch sales, $96,000.
I saw the merch sales too.
How much of that is ironic?
Googling.
Though?
I resisted looking at what the merch is.
It's probably bad. it's probably pretty bad. They raised $2 million in 2022. The Heritage Foundation and the Leadership Institute, both of which have innocuous names but very not innocuous missions have given Moms for Liberty a lot of money. But we still don't know most of the places that Moms for Liberty is getting it from. Like, don't know. I mean, whatever. Leonard Leo's got his fingers in everything.
Is this where we talk about that we thought that I thought Leonard Leo was a serial killer?
I do that every single time I see his name. I have to pause and be like, oh, not Leonard Lake.
The
torture dungeon guy who killed himself with a cyanide tooth when he was being questioned by the police. No, Leonard Leo, arguably worse for America than Leonard Lake.
Yeah, possibly.
I would say you could do a side-by-side and, like, Leonard Lake was scary and bad, and he did kill a bunch of people, but
maybe
Leonard
that should
Leo,
be our first grid.
Neither funny. That is...
Neither funny.
Nor
both bad in different ways.
Yeah, so Moms for Liberty also has supported... oh, my God. This is something that I was shocked to find. So a tax filing for Moms for Liberty's Florida-based foundation mm-hmm. shows that the organization received a $100,000 donation from Julie Fancelli. Julie Fancelli is... a member of the family that owns Publix grocery store.
Who knew?
I mean, if you're that far right, shouldn't you change the name of your grocery store to Privix? I'm sorry. Wait. That was so stupid.
Do you know what I was shocked to learn?
What?
The Moms for Liberty had a summit over the 4th of July. And do you know who one of their sponsors was?
Who?
Patriot Mobile. Erin, did you know there is there's an actual conservative Christian cell phone company? Who knew?
For what? For what?
I don't know. It's a Christian conservative cell phone company. How are their cell phones different?
How are their cell phones different? But also, how is it different than most major telecom companies that are just donating money to, like, are they, is it like an anti-abortion phone? It's like every time you, I don't know.
If you have a Patriot Mobile phone, your money is going to Trump's summit speech and the NRA, apparently, and CPAC.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, I don't want any of that, so I'm not going to be switching from Verizon. Something that I think we need to – we're laughing, right? And we're going to get into the, like, truly giggle, giggle, giggle part of this story pretty soon. But I think it's important for people to know that even though this is a fringe organization that champions bad ideas that nobody likes – this is an organization that is taken very seriously by the Republican establishment. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Asa Hutchinson, and Vivek Ramaswamy have all attended the Moms for Liberty summit. Yep. Like, they took it seriously enough to go to their dumb meeting. And so, you know, it's important, I think, for us to even though they are super fringe, like, this isn't actually fringe within the American Republican Party.
And I was going to say that one of the stated goals, as you said earlier, of Moms for Liberty is disbanding, dissolving the Department of Education, mm-hmm. which is something that Vivek, Ron DeSantis, and Trump all agree with. If they win the presidency, they will seek to dissolve the Department of Education, which, Erin, as we found out in our research, was only made cabinet level in 1979 by Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm. And there is what we call the nut graph in journalism. they've got all of these, like, flashy stories, anti-trans laws, libs of TikTok style, like, look at what these, you know, teachers are doing. Look at what they're teaching kids in school. You know, we've got fucking Joe Kennedy reading that book on the during a committee. Do you remember that? It was like the grossest. Fiona's over there nodding. Fiona remembers.
Oh, yes. Old man. Do you know, I'm sorry, I was thinking of a different Kennedy.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember. That was disgusting.
It's disgusting. Well, those stories and those causes are the, like, flashy little Moms for Liberty pet issues that get headlines and go viral. But really what they want to do is privatize public education. That has been a huge goal of the American conservative movement for decades. And they're getting closer than they've ever gotten before by convincing people. I mean, I think COVID convinced a lot of parents who distrusted the public education system to pull their kids out of school. Half of Generation Alpha can't read. Like, the system is really quickly collapsing. Ask any teacher. Ask anybody who works in a school right now. It is the worst it's ever been. And And even though I think most Americans would hear the idea of dissolving the Department of Education and be like, what? Why would you do that?
Right.
We are so close to that just happening before our eyes, and having public education go away and have it be mm-hmm. just like everything else in this country, something that you have to pay out the nose for and that is like cripplingly expensive and lines the pockets of people that don't have anybody's best interests in mind except their own.
Right.
So that's what Moms for Liberty, I think that's what they're really trying to do. And that's probably why they have so many like shadowy far right donors, because like,
yeah,
it's weird. Like, why do a bunch of middle-aged suit-wearing political consultants care what books kids can check out from the library? Like, why do you fucking care?
Well,
you're too old
don't.
To have kids that young.
And the funny thing is like, to your point, is that dissolving the Department of Education has, like, nothing to do with that. The Department of Education doesn't set the curriculum in schools. That's all done by the state. So they really just want to privatize education. That is all that this is. It is mm-hmm. all a smokescreen just for that.
Yeah. And unfortunately, as part of the smokescreen, there's a super gross
This
story.
Was so gross.
Such a gross story. So one of the three founders of Moms for Liberty is a woman named Bridget Ziegler. Bridget Ziegler is married to Christian Ziegler, who is a potato-shaped man who is in charge of the chair of the Florida GOP. And according to an investigative journalism piece, Christian and Bridget were into threesomes. They were having mm-hmm. a menage a trois with him, Bridget, Christian, and a third person, a woman, of course, because Republicans would never just let it be like two dudes and a woman.
Obviously.
Right. So anyway, they were within the context of a threesome relationship, the third party accused Christian Ziegler of abuse and mm-hmm. rape. And that is super disturbing. And if it turns out to be true, I hope he goes to jail. It's like super.
Definitely. And but in the reporting, one of the findings was that the three of them were supposed to meet up and Bridget couldn't make it. So the woman who was abused was like, I was really just in it for her, so she canceled. And that, according to the story, made him mad and is what prompted him to go over and assault her.
Okay. So that's horrible. That's like one level of horrible that is more horrible than this other thing that we're going to say. But like, okay. Why is it okay for – I mean, obviously, it's pretty hypocritical for a person who is having like – bisexual encounters, even
yeah.
though, you know, the one she was involved with allegedly were consensual.
Right.
If you're having consensual encounters that are outside of the realm of hetero, then why are you, what are you doing? Why are you crusading against, just like leave everyone alone. You would save
leave
so much energy.
Alone.
Just leave everyone alone. I don't understand. And like, It's really, I don't know, it sort of just reminds me of the, like, abortions for me and none for thee thing.
Yeah.
You know, how a lot of times protesters outside of clinics will be patients one day and then the next day they're back outside protesting. They're the only ones whose abortion is moral. I feel like that's how it is with the Zieglers. And it's a gross story. And I just, I don't know. Another thing is, like, Christian Ziegler is, like, not sexy. Not at all.
Not remotely. But the one thing, not the one thing, but an interesting thing about this is that, you know, as Floridians, as the head of the party, Ron DeSantis was like, he's got to go. Like, everyone gets due process, but this is an unnecessary distraction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
as opposed to Donald Trump with 91 indictments? Like, what?
Do you expect moral consistency from this party? Because
no.
It's if you try it, like, I'm feeling myself getting a headache right now, thinking about all of the mental gymnastics that they have to do in order to accommodate all of their deviancy.
No, see, the thing is, you and I would have to do gymnastics to do that. They literally, I think, are very good at compartmentalizing.
Yeah. Seriously, they're like the Container Store. Their brains just have all these little areas
just a
where things go.
Well-organizer influencer pantry. That's
I know.
All it is.
It's like every single box has calligraphy labeling exactly what's in there, and ne'er the twain shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's another thing. Bridget Ziegler is not nobody. You know, she's married to the chair of the Florida GOP, but she's also just now ending her term as the Sarasota School Board chair. And while she hasn't been directly involved in the leadership of the organization that she helped found, she is a member of an advisory board that helps. So it's sort of like she's still, I mean, the mom's... She's still pretty involved. She's still pretty involved. The organization is like, she's not involved. It's like, well, then why is she on this advisory board? So anyway, the organization, long story short, that is campaigning and championing Don't Say Gay bills, trying to get books banned from schools that help children understand themselves and their own identities, and attacking staff members that are members of the LGBTQ community are themselves having these... I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't even want to finish the sentence. I'm just like, how, if this were a writer's room, I would be like, this
like,
is,
I don't know. This isn't a great story.
This is too ham-fisted, guys. You got to do something else. Like, anyway. So another thing that we want to talk about, Moms for Liberty is probably not going away. Because mm-hmm. I think parental rights is a buzzword that we're going to hear in the debate tonight. Ron DeSantis loves the term parental rights, which is just, you know, a bullshit marketing term. But Moms for Liberty's shine has kind of worn off a little bit. In the 2023 elections, they tried to run a bunch of candidates for school board across the country, and they got shellacked.
Shellacked.
Absolutely shellacked. Pennsylvania, Iowa, Virginia— North Carolina, Minnesota.
Kansas.
Kansas.
Washington.
Not doing great. Ohio, not great. They're not doing well. So, you know, Moms for Liberty is still around. They're probably going to be around through 2024. If the phrase parental rights no longer gets the cachet from voters that it got, I'm sure we're going to see this organization go underground and then come back again. Like,
if only because they love wearing their own merch.
Indeed. Okay, news from Texas. Alyssa, can you introduce us to a lawsuit that is being filed in Texas against some of the state's draconian abortion bans?
Erin, a pregnant Texas woman, Kate Cox, whose fetus has a fatal condition, sued the state on Tuesday seeking an emergency court order to allow her doctor to perform an abortion despite the state's strict bans on the procedure. This lawsuit is believed to be one of the first attempts in the nation to seek a court-ordered abortion since SCOTUS overturned Roe v. Wade last year, allowing states to make their own abortion laws. So, Erin, Kate Cox is 20 weeks pregnant. Her fetus has been diagnosed with trisomy 18, a condition that in all but very rare cases leads to miscarriage, stillbirth, or the death of the infant within the first year after birth. Despite trips to the emergency room for pain and discharge, Cox, a mother of two young children who lives in the Dallas area, has been told by doctors that she is required to continue her pregnancy under state law. Yes, Erin? All roads lead back to SB 8. Part of the reason she has brought this suit is not only to herself be allowed to get an abortion, but she's seeking to protect her doctor from prosecution as well as her husband, who could both face civil liability under the state's 2021 abortion restriction known as SB 8, which means that private citizens, anyone who sees the doctor, her husband, walk into a clinic can sue her and anyone who helped her in obtaining an abortion. After, again, to remind folks of the law, SB 8 denies abortion after detection of fetal cardiac activity, which is usually around 6 weeks, which is when most people do not know they could possibly be pregnant.
So the birth defect, it's actually mm-hmm. a chromosomal defect. That
it is, right? It means three chromosomes.
It's something that most states, I mean, this is another failure of the state of Texas's infrastructure because in most states, you can take a test pretty early in your pregnancy, mm-hmm. like 10 weeks. And again, this would be illegal in Texas regardless, but around 10 weeks,
right.
You can take a screening test that will tell you if it just takes your blood, minimally invasive, and they'll tell you if you have any markers of a few really catastrophic genetic issues, and that's one of them. It's really tragic. I don't know what these laws accomplish. If that baby is not going to live, let the parents grieve. That's a wanted child. Like, right. why should she need to carry and put herself through a pregnancy that is going to end? Like, the longer it goes on, the harder it's going to be on her body. Mm-hmm. Like, every time you give birth, it's a huge risk. Like, it's a risk to your future fertility. It's a risk to your health, to your comfort, to your ability to move through the world without, like, pelvic injury. You know, there's right. so many risks in birth, and I don't understand what this accomplishes. What does it – you're forcing a person to carry a baby, and with that baby, the stress and anxiety, you're stopping them from moving on. Like, let them move on.
And she could end up giving birth – to a baby that would be so ill, it would have no chance. Like that is its own form of torture, that they mm-hmm. are inflicting her on what is a truly, almost certainly devastating outcome. But how long they are going to make her bear that burden is somehow up to the state. That is so fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And one of the potentially, I hate to say good outcomes, but because the law in Texas is so nebulous when it comes to exceptions, that this case could actually force the state to more clearly define what is allowed under law, which would protect patients as well as doctors. Mm-hmm. So she is represented by the Center for Reproductive Rights, which is also representing the 5 women who have brought suit in Texas earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. And another point I want to make is that when babies with these like devastating and probably non-survivable birth defects are born, they take resources.
Right.
I mean, like in a country where the number of OBGYNs available to people who need them is dwindling and is at a premium, we are going to devote resources to something that the parents don't want, that is not survivable for the infant, and that takes time, attention, effort, labor, yeah. and impacts the mental health of the medical professionals who have to work on these cases. Like, right. they're already fucking stretched to their limits, and we're gonna put them through this as well. Like, both parents and professionals.
And it'll be up to the insurance companies whether they're going to allow the treatment. Like, that's the other thing that's crazy about this when you talk about resources. Mm-hmm. This is if Kate Cox were forced to give birth, if the child survived birth, if then they would have to file all these claims for insurance that insurance could deny for the care.
Yep. Like, they would need to get a social security number and then enter the right. social security number into their insurance. Like, it's like the second
it is extreme yeah. cruelty. It is inhumane.
It is complete. It is like, it feels like a medieval torture device, like something that is
more.
Just completely unnecessary, gratuitous, mm-hmm. and like, frankly, evil.
It's
completely evil. Okay, let's move from evil, evil to stupid evil. After Tommy Tuberville, senator from Alabama, after 9 months of blocking hundreds of military promotions to protest the Pentagon's payment of abortion-related travel costs, his efforts have been aborted. And he has nothing to show for it. On Tuesday, he said that he would lift the hold on some of the blocked military promotions. Military promotions for people that, by the way, had nothing to do with coming up with the policy that he was mad about. And the policy
right.
that he was mad about was something that was enacted after Dobbs, that where the government would reimburse service members who were stationed in states with restrictive abortion laws who needed to travel out of state to obtain abortion care. Not even reimbursing them for the care itself, reimbursing them for the travel that it takes to go from Texas to, say, New Mexico or,
right.
you know, Idaho to California, whatever. Yeah, and Tommy Tuberville held up hundreds of nominations, endangered national security, made a lot of people mad, fucked a lot of families up. A lot of families waiting for, couldn't move. Their spouses couldn't get jobs. Like, there's all of these, the kids couldn't start at a new school. Like, he fucked all of this up and got nothing.
And he was never going to get nothing. He was never going to get anything.
Yeah, I mean, like, he wouldn't have done this.
His own party was turning on him. Like, this, he was trying to make fetch happen. It was never going to happen.
Well, what's really funny is that he is really trying to save face. After all of this, he said that he got some of the stuff that he was looking for. What, Tommy?
What'd you get, Tommy?
Stuff?
Put it on your Instagram. Let's see what you got.
Okay, to put it in football terms, buddy, you got Florida stated. You got Jack Squat.
Even I know what that means.
And he's the former coach of Alabama. He got Florida stated. He got absolutely nothing. He did not change the policy. He's still holding up confirmations for some four-star generals, but I don't think that that's going to hold for very long because there are mechanisms within the Senate that can just flick him away.
Yeah, Tim Kaine was on television yesterday saying that the Senate would probably just demand to stay in and vote on every single one of them before they went home for the holidays. So way to totally – listen, if there is one thing that members of Congress care about, it's getting on vacation. And so Tommy, I'm telling you, he's going to be sitting alone at the lunch table right before Christmas if they have to do this.
Oh, my God. Well, Alyssa, you know people who used to work for the Senate.
Yep.
Have you heard any of them say, like, make comments about how pissed senators would be if they were?
Yes. I mean, even Tim Kaine was saying it yesterday. Like, give me a break. I mean, they're going to end up being forced to travel on, like, the second busiest travel day of the holiday season. So that's what you get. Thank Tommy Tuberville.
Okay, but that's funny. And good for America.
That's funny and good for America.
That's funny and good for America because I think if more members of the Senate actually have to experience the hell that is commercial air travel on actual busy travel days, maybe they'll, like, introduce some resolutions or try to build
a
train.
And I gotta be honest, I can't imagine how many nonstop flights there are from Washington Reagan to whatever Tommy Tuberville's airport is.
What an idiot. Dumbest senator. And there is stiff competition. Dumbest senator. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about Vice President Kamala Harris, former senator, keeps having to go back to her old job.
Erin, I thought this was one of the weirdest stories. Like, of course, you know me. I work from home. I'm by myself. I have cable television on all day. It's an illness. And I see, like, Chuck Schumer giving her the attagirl. You know, like, oh, way to go, girl. I'm like, what is he talking about? And then I find out that Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris, made history earlier this week by casting her 32nd tie-breaking vote, setting a new record for number of votes cast by a vice president.
Well, that's going to win somebody Jeopardy one time.
Someday. You know what? That's a good outcome here. You're right. It's a good Jeopardy question. It's a good Jeopardy question.
Bar trivia at the very least. It's going to be the championship question.
I mean, but like, I don't know. It's not like she did anything. Like, I felt so bad for the story because it's like, it's the weirdest atta girl for something she kind of has nothing to do with. And they're all like praising her and it's literally her job. Like, it's literally her job to break ties.
But it sounds so boring. Like, she can't do anything. Like, she's got to stick around and be like, all right, well, I can't do any cool shit. I got to wait for these idiots to get in a deadlock.
And, like, media people-ish took the time to be like, yay, Kamala, because she's not doing anything else that's great. And also not fair. Like, the vice president is the vice president. I really – and, look, I was living in the middle of it. What do I know? But people – I don't remember all these think pieces done about Joe Biden when Barack Obama was president. And also, if people want to wonder why her, quote, approval rating is a little bit low, she was literally given the most unpopular thing to be the hallmark of her portfolio.
Oh my God. Yeah.
The administration put her in charge of immigration.
Yeah.
I mean, just to rewind, and I will double check my memory on this when we get off, I am pretty sure that the first thing Joe Biden was put in charge of as president was selling the Recovery Act, which meant going around America and like cutting ribbons for how money was being spent, which most people like. Like most people look favorably when their roads and bridges get fixed.
Yeah. And most people like that. Even Republican governors, they pretend that they did it and like try to whitewash the fact that it's like federal money doing it.
Yeah. I mean, and like she has had problems. She's had a lot of turnover in her office and stuff like that. But I just thought it was such a weird story to begin with. And then also so strange to be tethered to like, also, she's not doing great.
Oh, Kamala. The thing is, I think that she is a really great, passionate speaker when it comes to the issues of choice and reproductive justice, reproductive freedom. Right. So I hope going into 2024, the Biden administration actually lets her go out and speak about.
Yeah.
Because there's, like we've said, old men talking about abortions, oh, kind of weird.
Creepy.
Yeah. Even if they're like pro-choice, if they get too into it, it's like, why are you such a nerd about abortion? Like,
why do you know so much?
Why do you know so much? Unless you're literally a medical doctor that performs abortions, you shouldn't. I mean, I want you to know. You should be for it, know the basics. But I feel like maybe Kamala would be the person to talk about this.
A little bit more standing on the issue.
Yes, a little bit more it's a gynecological procedure. It's super, like, imagine if there was like some urology issue with like the male anatomy. And
no, I don't want to know anything about it.
We had a female president going up there being like, we got to let the men do whatever they want to their dicks.
Right, like a female president getting up there and being like, so the scrotum. No, thank you.
Stop it. Stop it.
You should know that there is one and let's move on.
Yes. Does that make us old? Are we prudes? I don't know.
Erin, you know I'm a prude. I'm happy to say it, and that's fine.
Okay, let's talk about Liz Cheney.
Yes.
Liz Cheney wrote a burn book, and it came out. It's called Oath and Honor, A Memoir and a Warning. Okay. That's fine.
I knew it.
I mean, is her memoir the warning? Is it about what happens when you're born into a family of megalomaniacs? And
Erin, I'm guessing she skips that part.
Okay. Okay. Is it a warning about how you shouldn't disown your gay sister?
Again, I'm going to guess that might be a footnote. But okay. I'm guessing there's not a chapter on that.
Okay. Maybe there is. I don't know. I feel like Liz Cheney, I don't want to be a Liz Cheney defender. I would love to talk to Liz Cheney because I think she knows a lot of stuff.
Why I'll be a Liz Cheney defender?
I think that
she's fucking real. Like, I get it. Look, we know who she is. We know who she is. We know what she believes. And to me, you can have a conversation with someone if you know what they believe. You won't agree with them. Mm-hmm. But she's not like, I mean, Erin, I woke up this morning. Trump said he's going to be a dictator if he wins.
Just for one day.
But I guess the point is, I took it to mean that if you're a dictator day one, you're kind of a dictator forever.
Right. It's sort of like the purge. If you murder your neighbor's entire family on the purge, you're still a murderer after the purge is done. I think Liz Cheney is somebody who has demonstrated an ability to learn from her past and be contrite and forthcoming about the way that she has learned from her past. So if there is a chapter in her book, which I actually might read, if there is a chapter in her book about feeling bad about being a jerk to her sister, I wouldn't surprise me. I think that out of all of the like Republican politicians, I think that she's probably the most likely to be like, you know what? I don't like that I did that.
Right. And that's the difference too. She's not flip-flopping. She's like learning and growing. Again, I don't want to make her an American hero, but like at least she can kind of roll with the times, maybe.
Yeah. Although she is considering a third party run. Do you think she's considering a third party run so that she gets better press for her book? Because she's a savvy,
One, mad respect if that's the case.
Yeah, good for you, Liz.
But also, she has ever since, like, we have to assume that ever since she decided to be on the January 6th committee, that she knew kind of what her fate would be. So for all of these, she to me, and you and I have talked about this a lot, there's like two groups of Republicans. Everyone who was a Republican during the Trump administration, you could either do what Liz Cheney did and be like, I call bullshit, this is bad, and this is a threat to democracy. Or you can be the kind of person who wrote a book and is like, listen, I stayed until the very end because I thought I myself was going to keep Donald Trump from becoming the terror we knew him to be, even though I joined the administration well after things like the Muslim ban had been effected. Like,
mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. She's no Cassidy. Thank goodness.
She's no Cassidy.
She also has said that she's not ruling out voting for Joe Biden or campaigning for him if he's the 2024 Democratic nominee. I don't know how much power Liz Cheney has over people. Like, I don't know how that would look.
I think that there is probably a small targeted subset of people for whom she might be an effective surrogate.
Right. For people who are doing quiet luxury in the 80s.
Yeah.
I think.
Exactly.
That's her target demo.
But again, I give her credit for saying that when you see how many Republicans cannot say, even people standing on stage to become the Republican nominee can't say, no, I don't support Donald Trump. And no, if he's the nominee, I wouldn't support him. Like, that's crazy. Like, in that way, she is much more honest because you know that the others agree and feel it. They just won't say it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like the Republican Party right now under Donald Trump. Did you watch The Fall of the House of Usher? How far did you get in?
Oh, not that far.
Did you get to episode 2?
No.
Okay. Well, never mind then. The final scene of episode 2 is disgusting. It's like people at this hedonistic rave bathed by boiling water and they all die.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
What about that pitch right there made you think that this was a show for me?
That's a great point.
Come on. You know.
It's so cartoonishly violent, though, that it's like my brain turned off.
Fair enough. You can dissociate a bit and be like, right. This is truly not real.
Yeah. It was like a comic book Quentin Tarantino Kill Bill levels of just complete over-the-top gore. But I feel like that dance part, that is the Republican Party in late 2023 going into 2024. They're at this hedonistic dance party that doesn't even look that fun. And it's like, oh, guys, your complete horniness for whatever is going on in here is not going to end very well. You know?
I don't know. Maybe should we read her book? I feel like I kind of need to read her book now.
I know. Now I feel like I sold myself on this book. I don't know.
Well, because, like, I feel like she doesn't hold back. And here's the thing. She's only trashing people we already don't like. So yeah. It's kind of like, it's a bit like a juicy romance novel for us that we might get at the grocery store.
Right. Except I am completely destroyed from the inside out. And
right.
So
Bad for America.
And, well, I think good for America and probably not funny. Liz Cheney does not strike me as a funny person.
I don't know.
She might
be
low-key funny.
We'll see. Some of these stories may write themselves.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Okay. Finally, a toast. We got a troast. It's a toast and a roast.
We have a troast and then I have a tiny toast after.
Okay. So former Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor passed this past week. Mm-hmm. She was 93 years old. I couldn't believe she was only 93 years old.
I know. I felt like she was 100.
Like younger than Chuck Grassley. That's like there are people running for re-election who are older than the recently deceased former Supreme Court Justice who retired a long time ago. Yeah, she retired a long time ago, but she passed due to complications related to advanced dementia. She was inspirational to a lot of female lawyers, including the 5 that have served on the Supreme Court. She also saved abortion rights in 1992, yep. Despite being appointed by President Ronald Reagan, who was kind of staunchly anti-abortion rights. She helped save abortion rights in 1992 in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. But she also helped ruin America in 2000, Was it 2000 or 2001, Bush v. Gore?
2001, I think, is when SCOTUS would have been.
Yeah, when the ruling came down. So, yeah, she was, and I think that she also was an adherent to an old kind of politeness, decorum type of life that now doesn't really exist anymore. So that's, I don't know, that's how I feel about Sandra Day O'Connor. I think that was trailblazer with a complicated legacy.
Well, you know, it's like, I think that, you know, she was confirmed 99-0 as a Supreme Court justice. I think that I'm cool with someone being on the Supreme Court who doesn't necessarily agree with me, but like approaches it as an actual lawyer judge and has an open mind. And but the fact that I did not know about her that I loved the most was that she and William Rehnquist went to Stanford together. They dated and he proposed. And she said no.
Good for her.
I know.
Normalize turning down proposals. She was a trailblazer in turning down proposals from rich guys.
Yeah. I was like, good. I was like, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. She was an important woman in American history. And rest in peace, Justice O'Connor.
Rest in peace. Another rest in peace that I just wanted to shout out. Norman Lear passed away as we were getting ready to record, Erin.
I hate it.
A good dude, founder of People for the American Way. I mean, like, such a good, good human being. And, like, the difference in our ages, me and you, not me and Norman Lear, is, like, I grew up, you know, like, my parents weren't exactly, like, let's find out about children's programming. They were like, we're watching All in the Family and so are you. Mm-hmm. And so I always grew up, like, with a real place in my heart for him. But the one shout out I wanted to give Norman Lear is that his show Maude with Bea Arthur, which was a spinoff of All in the Family, was the first show in prime time to tackle the issue of abortion. They openly talked about, Maude openly talked about with her husband on television that she was 47, my age, and pregnant, and whether she should have an abortion or not. And it was like a real groundbreaking moment because it was before Roe was legal.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was in the 70s. This was in the 70s. What a groovy guy. He was ahead of his time. He was 101 years old, I believe. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, a life well lived. He was sharp to the end.
Yep.
According to everything I've seen of him publicly. I think he was doing public appearances and social media stuff like last year.
Totally.
Like recently. Sharp to the end. I don't want to sound like pessimistic, but like progress is not linear. Right? Norman Lear, the fact that he was doing what he was doing in the 70s, and then we had these eras of backlash. Like, I think we sometimes get really comfortable with the fact that, like, oh, this has been accomplished, and so now that means there's a pin in it, and we can't go back. No, we absolutely can, and we do all the time. And we need to guard the gains that we win, and we need to keep fighting for the things that we think are settled, but actually are not settled, because there's always going to be somebody trying to claw back what we've won. And Norman Lear is a really good example of a person who was aware of this and kept fighting, even though I think he was doing stuff in the 70s that, like, in the 90s he was probably like, what is going on?
It's like, seriously, I thought we covered this, people.
What is going on? Why does nobody? Anyway, so Norman Lear, a real one. Gosh.
Real one.
He was, we gotta guard Mel Brooks at all costs. I'm sorry I even said that. Guard Mel Brooks at all costs, please. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got an interview with the president of Catholics for Choice.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with Delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who would have admonished the three wise men for not buying off the registry. Why do all that research into donkey adaptable car seats when some dudes who think they know better show up with myrrh? Mom complaints. Hashtag mom complaints. Don't need any more onesies. Come on, guys. Alyssa, I am excited for this interview. It's the holiday season. A lot of us are thinking about religion. Religion is the reason for the season. And I think something that's missing a lot of times in our conversations about abortion, about reproductive rights, about reproductive justice is a religious perspective, because it's there and it matters. So without further ado, she's a 3-time winner of the Religion News Writers Association's Awards for Commentary of the Year and has garnered over a dozen Catholic Press Association awards for her work. She's a Yale Divinity School grad and a lifelong activist for women and the LGBTQ plus community. She's the president of Catholics for Choice, a nonprofit that seeks to build a strong community of pro-choice Catholic advocates to promote public policy rooted in true religious liberty, social justice, and respect for conscience. Jamie Manson, welcome to Hysteria.
Thank you. What an honor to be here.
We're so glad you're here. So the Catholic Church and reproductive choice often feel like two incongruous entities. So talk to us about Catholics for Choice and your mission.
Absolutely. Our opposition is religious. Opposition to women's rights, opposition to LGBTQ rights, opposition to contraceptive and abortion rights are all religious, and they're primarily Catholic. And so what seems incongruous is actually profoundly connected. And so Catholics for Choice is actually 50 years old, but since the fall of Roe has gotten a whole new infusion of life and relevance. And so what we do is we try to name, first of all, that the fact is the opposition is religious, and therefore religious voices should actually be centered in the fight for our abortion rights. The fact is that the majority of Catholics actually support abortion rights. 63% think it should be legal in all or most cases. And Catholics are having abortions at very high rates. 1 in 4 abortion patients in this country identifies as Catholic. And yet we have a hierarchy and this very dominant narrative that says you can't be Catholic and support abortion rights. And it's just a false narrative that we're here to dismantle.
Jamie, what challenges have you faced dealing with an increasingly hard right American church? Do American church leaders actually represent the views of most American Catholics when it comes to reproductive choice?
No, the opposite. And that's that. But we have ceded that narrative to the right wing for so many years. And that's why we're here. Really, we serve two populations. One is that population of Catholics that I mentioned who support abortion rights but are very closeted about it, and the part of the population that just doesn't know how they feel about abortion because of their religiously fueled stigma, because it is so polarized. And I think this is somewhere the pro-choice movement has come up short, is by acknowledging to this population that it is, for many people, a morally complex issue, and encountering people there and giving them the information they need, giving them the education, because they've been victimized by decades of disinformation and manipulative imagery. And the anti-choice playbook, which was written by Catholics in the 1970s. And so we exist for both of those populations. It's really, really hard, because I think that we have forgotten, we who are part of the pro-choice movement have forgotten who the enemy is and it is religious. And so I find a lot of my day is actually struggling with the pro-choice movement and with funders to make this case really clear, is that religious voices have to be centered because only we can speak back to that religious language. And that's the way we're going to win. That's the way we're going to transform hearts and minds around this issue, which is the work that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot of religion being cited, like you mentioned, in Dobbs and in other cases like conscience laws where pharmacists can refuse to fulfill prescriptions for people, et cetera, et cetera. How do Catholics for Choice work with other religions who have determined that their faith is an important component in their approach to reproductive justice and that they believe in reproductive freedom as a matter of faith?
Yeah, so we are the only Catholic organization in the United States that works on contraceptive and abortion rights. So it's a pretty lonely road for us, even though, again, we are in the majority. So our interfaith coalition is essential. And we have three key principles for why we as Catholics support abortion rights. One is conscience, one is social justice, and the other is religious freedom, which is what you're naming right now. And good Catholic teaching says we're supposed to honor religious pluralism. You know, our right to religious freedom is supposed to protect not only my right to practice my faith, but also my right to be free of the religious beliefs of others. And what's happening now is that Catholic theology is being codified into civil law. And it's Catholic theology that the majority of Catholics don't even agree with. And so we try to make the argument with our other faith-based partners that this is a real issue of religious liberty, that whether you're Catholic or not, the Catholic Church is taking away your rights, your basic fundamental civil rights. And so we do try to approach it that way with other Catholics to say, listen, when Catholic theology becomes codified into civil law, the religious freedom of everyone is violated. So that's a really essential part of our argument.
You came out as a lesbian in your first column in the National Catholic Reporter back in 2008 and are still one of the few openly LGBTQ people, let alone theologians, in the Catholic media ecosystem. How has your identity been met by your peers in the church?
Well, I have seen an extraordinary change that I did not think I would see in my lifetime. When I came out in 2008, it was a very different church. There was no groovy Pope Francis. We didn't have marriage. Same-sex marriage was not legal. And so I do believe that by sharing my story very boldly and without apology, it did, you know, change the landscape. And we're in a moment now. I was just at the Vatican, actually, for 2 weeks in October because Pope Francis called this giant meeting in which he says he wants to listen to the voices of those who have been disenfranchised by the church. And among those voices are LGBTQ. And so I went there and I made this the point. I brought abortion stories to the Vatican. I actually took bound copies of abortion stories to Rome, you know, to tell them that Catholics are also having abortions. And this is a teaching that affects even more Catholics than the ban on LGBTQ relationships. And so that has given me hope and given me the gumption to call Francis, you know, on what he's claiming. And to say, I've seen you do this now with LGBTQ people. I want to see you now do this with women who have had abortions. And so, again, I didn't think I'd see what I saw in Rome in my lifetime. And so I'm intrigued. I'm always very pessimistic with this church. but we have to take whatever opportunities we can to call them on their claims.
Mm-hmm. You say you're pessimistic. I find your continued association with the church to be very optimistic. I was raised Catholic. I was like, I went all the way. I went through Catholic university. I was practicing into my 20s. But I eventually left because I couldn't morally reconcile myself and my own beliefs with what the church was saying, like in my name as a church member, and various issues, you know, that caused me to do this. But when I left, I didn't really look back. So as somebody who's still associated with the church, what keeps you holding on to your faith when some people might say, just this organization doesn't care, just give up? Like, what keeps you hanging on?
I have good days and bad days. On my good days, it's because there are things about the tradition that really do give my life meaning. I mean, that's what religion is supposed to do, is help us answer the tough and unanswerable questions. And so the sacramentality and, you know, the notion that God is everywhere, the social justice tradition, you know, I've seen Catholics do extraordinarily brave and courageous things for the sake of justice, and they do that because of the tradition has formed them in that way. And that, to me, is worth struggling for. On my more pessimistic days, it is because the Catholic Church is a global force and is really a global menace when it comes to particularly women's rights and all rights in the sphere of sex and sexuality. And so somebody has got to stand up from inside the church and say, not in my name are you going to take away fundamental human rights, not in the name of my faith. And so the Catholic Church has massive power at the United Nations. You know, they practically have member status. They are able to ratify UN treaties and obstruct negotiations. And so, they have a presence in every country in the world. They have diplomatic relations because technically the Vatican is a city state and the Pope is a head of state. And so it's to call attention to this global power that is reinforcing patriarchy, reinforcing discrimination, is really, really important. And I have to do that, you know, from a place of Catholic identity, I really believe.
Now, of course, the holiday season is big in the church. How are you celebrating Christmas this year?
One of the things that we at Catholics for Choice particularly are trying to, a message we're trying to get across is that Mary had a choice. And that is right out of our scripture. And that is, there's nothing in the Bible about abortion. People often say, I'm against abortion because the Bible says. The Bible doesn't say anything about abortion. But it does say very clearly that when the angel Gabriel visited Mary to do this annunciation, that she had this opportunity to bear the Son of God, Mary has the opportunity to say, yes, let it be so. And that is a really, really important part of our tradition that we're really pushing this year is, you know, that what women are asking for is what Mary had too, the right to have a choice.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what makes Mary Mary in the eyes of the church, right? That she chose to, she made the choice. That's literally,
right. That's
the center of the story. Exactly. One final question. Does Pope Francis ever laugh? Is he like, does he like jokes? I'm so curious.
I mean, I've heard that he's, you know, quite charming. I think the issue is he never talks to women,
men aren't funny. So
exactly.
Go.
And so, you know, I do think, sometimes he makes unfortunate jokes about women, and that's when I wrote an entire column about that back in the day. So I think that is the issue. Is I've heard that he's in his every day. He has lunch only with men, and I think that's what we have to really understand is that these ideas about abortion and contraception are developed by a radical patriarchy of ostensibly celibate men who have no inroads into the lives of women. And so, that's a painful irony that we need to be interrogating as Catholics.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jamie Manson, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation. And thank you for the work that you do as part of Catholics for Choice, as the leader of Catholics for Choice. And Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. A joy to be with you. Thank you.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Thank you.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who know from personal experience that making snow angels is completely overrated.
Absolutely. So, it's pathological.
It's so ridiculous. You're going to get snow on your neck.
No way you cannot get snow down the back of your neck. No way.
You're going to get it in your socks. You're going to get it up your jacket. All
you
the tenders.
You might as well roll around in sand.
It's so stupid. I mean, do it once. You've never been in a snowstorm before. You're like 35 and it's been 20 years since you've been in snow. Whatever. Do it once. But like, I'm warning you, it's not great. There's other.
It's not great.
Making a snowman.
Make a snowman.
Not
totally
overrated.
Snowballs. Wonderful.
Super fun. Yeah. Put food coloring in the snow. Make a snowman that's different colors.
That's
it's great.
Such a good idea.
Snow angels, though. Gosh,
stupid.
It's dumb. I think peeing letters in the snow is better than snow angels.
Trying to make. Here's the thing about the snow angel. Unless you're with another person. And you go stiff as a board and put your arms up so they can hoist you up, that snow angel is going to look like nothing but a Law and Order chalk outline by the time you're done.
It's going to look like a snow mess. I saw a picture today of the imprint that an owl leaves on the snow when it successfully grabs prey from the snow.
Yeah.
Now that's a snow angel. It looks awesome because the owl flies down. You see an outline of their like delicate, beautiful wings. And then the pit of gore and despair from which they grabbed the rabbit or the mole or whatever. But it looks cool, and human snow angels just do not.
Just be an owl.
Turn into an owl or
an
get
owl.
The fuck out. Turn into an owl.
What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. Some announcements for the class before we get to I Feel Petty. The holidays are coming up fast, but there's still time to snag the perfect gifts for everyone you love, even the people you just tolerate.
The Crooked Store is stocked with super giftable winter essentials, including best-selling tees that are now available as cozy sweatshirts.
And the sweatshirts are indeed very cozy. Head to crooked.com/store to shop and make sure to order by December 13th to get your merch in time for the holidays. Okay. Are you feeling petty?
Oh, I'm petty.
Okay. Let's hear.
Erin, I need Donald Trump to stop talking about food. I forget which of the women from the West Wing provided us with the story about the hamburger and ketchup thrown against the wall and like the
It was gory. Cassidy.
Cassidy, she's back. So like Cassidy and the ketchup dripping. But in Liz Cheney's book, the aforementioned Liz Cheney, she talks about how Mike Kevin went down to Florida because reports were that Trump was so depressed after he lost that he wasn't eating. Now, Erin, we know that Trump thinks that he is very godlike in a lot of ways, including, I think, having like reverse dysmorphia.
Yes.
Where like he sees a very beautiful body and face and person and human being in the mirror when he looks. That mm-hmm. is not the case.
No, he's not built like an NFL quarterback. And his stats that he's publicly dispensed these stats. They're like, you are not the height and weight of Tom Brady. You are just simply
right.
not.
He's not. And when the reports from Liz's book came out, Trump, again, a man, I want to flag for people who are thinking of voting for him, who continues to show no impulse control, had to take to whatever Twitter, whatever platform still allows him on and say, I was not depressed. I was angry. And it was not that I was not eating. It's that I was eating too much.
Oh,
all right,
God.
We agree with that too. We're sure that's probably the case.
Fine.
Whatever you were eating wasn't healthy, I'm certain of it.
Also, anger is an emotion. Let's normalize the fact that anger is an emotion. Trump was emotional. Anger is not a man get out of emotion free card. It is the emotion. Trump was emotional. He was eating his feelings, and his feelings were well done anger.
With ketchup.
When I saw this story, Alyssa, I was like, what a, like, talk about a weird story. I don't want to know.
I don't
want
to know.
Care.
But now I know. And I thought you all had to know.
Okay. Mine is also about food. Mine's about food. It's the holiday season-ish, whatever. It's me wanting snacks season.
Okay.
We've got to have a conference between the two different types of truffles. And we've got to decide who gets to be called a truffle. Is it a mushroom? Is it a candy?
Oh, okay. That was actually going to be my question, Erin. Which truffle are we talking about?
Exactly. I don't want to have a moment when I read truffle on the menu and think mushroom or chocolate. Those two flavors do not combine well in my head unless it's a magic mushroom in chocolate. But I'm just saying we need to figure out, no, macaroons, another one. Macaroons and truffles, we need a new word for one of the things. I don't care who picks one. I don't care who picks what. I don't care if it's the mushrooms that are the truffle or if it's the candy that's the truffle, but we need to figure it out.
You just blew my brain. I had not realized there were two macaroons.
Yeah, well, there's one that, like, I think it has a French pronunciation, but I'm not going to do it.
Whatever.
I know, but everybody sounds like a douchebag when they try to. French people make no effort to pronounce things with an English accent.
No.
So I'm making no effort to pronounce things in a French accent. Croissant.
Croissant. No, but let me just say I took French for 15 years. I still couldn't pronounce it for you if I had to. But I only like the coconut macaroon. I don't like the other macaroons.
You don't like the pillowy ones?
No. I just like chocolate. I like a macaroon dipped in chocolate, the coconut ones.
Okay, I like both. I am in no way do I.
Do you like both truffles too?
Yes, but I don't like thinking about them at the same time. We need different words for those two things. They are too divergent in flavor. It like causes my brain to like skip. I'm like,
even, you know what? They should have to, if they're talking about the mushroom truffles, they should have to be like black truffle or white truffle because that would at least help differentiate it a little bit on paper.
Yeah. Although white chocolate truffle is a thing. Like, we need to.
But they'd call it a white chocolate truffle. It wouldn't just be a white truffle.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true. Yeah.
I don't like chocolate truffles. They're too rich for me.
They're always like infused with a flavor that I'm like, why did you need to mix this with chocolate?
This is how I feel about a truffle. If I get a Russell Stover box of candies, I want the caramels and the nuts, maybe a nougat. I don't want anything with a truffle middle.
I don't want anything goopy. I don't want anything that's like caramel texture, but not caramel flavor. Mm-mm.
Oh, see, I do like those. The strawberry ones, I do like that.
Absolutely not. Fruit and chocolate, ne'er the twain shall meet. Why have I said that phrase twice today?
Twice today. But you know what this does prove to me? We have been partners now for over 4 years.
5 years. Over five
life,
years.
Almost 5 years. Life is like a box of chocolates, and we could split a box perfectly and have no arguments.
That's true. Life is like a box of chocolates. I hate 75% of it.
And I'll eat that 75%.
Oh, right. That is all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die. Jamie Manson, thank you so much for joining us and talking about your work with Catholics for Choice. Listeners, we love you. We love you so much. We're going to do some more listener shout-outs next week. If you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. Everybody on the production staff can read the email, so just be discerning with how personal you get because we can all see it. And
also, we might read it out loud.
We might read it out loud. That's true. And if you do send us something, just sign off with the way that you would want us to recognize you on air. So if you're like, you know, Liz from Wyoming, for example, just sign as Liz from Wyoming. Or if you want to go by Liz Cheney, you can also sign Liz
Cheney.
Or if
you're Liz's sister.
Or if you're Liz Cheney's sister, Virginia. Thanks so much. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.